And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Five of them, the guest goes, oh, wait, did we start already? Because I just don't tell them.
That's great. Yeah. Oh, how you doing, my friend? It's been a while.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on your show, man. That was a ton of fun.
That was a lot of fun. A lot of viewers. That's great. It was great.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And just so people, just so my people can get to know you, although some of them apparently do. Did you, Sharon, who was a guest on my, Sharon, who's a guest on my show, wrote you that she loves your podcast. So you're pretty popular.
Okay. I'll take that.
Fair enough, man. Why podcasting? Let's start there. Why podcasting?
I stopped the TV show in 2013, started in 97 to 2013.
Oh,
and
nice.
that was a long time. So I took a break. And of course, my mother and my wife's mother weren't doing well at the time. So it was time to take care of family and take care of business. And then both passed away. And it's like, okay, what am I going to do now? And I went to the studio, and the director of the studio, Ted, I mentioned, why don't you jump on and do a podcast instead of coming in the studio to do a full production?
Right.
So I hindered on that, and I jumped onto Spotify's podcaster and started, and it just blew up. Everybody found out I was back, and it's just been going great.
What was the TV show?
No Cover TV.
Oh, okay. And the premise was...
No Cover TV means it doesn't cost anything to come on the show or watch the show, watch great music and interview the bands and stuff. So it was an hour show. Bands would come in and play for 40, 45 minutes, and then I would do a quick interview with them. Fine. And that would air every Friday and Wednesday evening.
Beautiful. And then now you're a musician.
Yes.
That's an electric guitar behind you?
Yeah, I got guitars all over, yes.
How many guitars do you own?
3, 4, 7.
that's not abusive. Seven's a good amount.
That's a good amount. You know, I've sold a couple here and there, but I don't play out as much. I don't play in a band anymore. That ended in 97. So that's when I focused on being, promoting bands and being a music producer and stuff like that, and doing the TV stuff and getting the music out there for these artists.
Right. Do you you play acoustic too?
Yeah, all the time, yes.
Which is harder? And there's a right answer.
I don't know, boy. Well, I'm a picker when it comes to acoustic, and I use a pick when I play electric. So I think it's harder to play electric because I'm a good picker. I like to pick.
You're the first person to say electric is harder.
Well, it's easy, but when it comes to finger picking... you can get a little fumbled up there because you got a lot of tones going on with your strings and stuff, and where I can control it more on an acoustic.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah, because usually the perspective is there's more margin for error on an electric guitar because there's distortion and all. There's like much more margin for error than. And when did you start playing guitar?
12 years old, 77.
Night. Wait, you were 12 years old when I can do this math. 77 minus 7 gets us to 70. And then we need 5 gets us to 65. You're younger than me.
Am I really? Okay.
What did you start playing? Was it to date?
I always wanted the girls and stuff, of course. But yeah. It was actually three aspects: the love of music, wanting the girls, and to make my mother mad.
Did it work on all levels?
All the way.
That's so beautiful, man. And where'd you grow up?
I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, never left. Been there your whole life, yeah?
Well, I've lived in the Poconos in Pennsylvania, L.A., California, so I've done my traveling.
Oh, okay. But then you circle back home.
Yeah. Come back home.
What time? What? How old were you when you came back home?
Was 2001. I came back from California.
Oh, okay.
And that's the last time I've been out.
I grew up in a little bit north of here in the Hudson Valley, in a town called Rhinebeck, and dude, I'm dying to get back there. But my wife makes a metric fuck ton of money down here, and my daughter's in school down here for another 6 months.
Right.
So I'm cuffed, but within a year from now, if you invite me back on your show within a year now, I'll show you my new house up there.
Nice. I want to see that.
If that could happen. Now you one thing I noticed about you, or one thing I think we have in common, you're a giant advocate for music in addition to playing it.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's the future?
Oh, I don't look at it that way. Honestly, I do what I do for the love of doing it and helping the musicians to better themselves, increase their confidence in what they're doing, and make them the best they can be. Yeah. You know, I had my opportunity back in the day. It didn't work out as well as I wanted it to. So why not jump in and help the others? So the future is just continue doing what I do, whether it's through a podcast avenue, TV, or radio DJ.
What was your opportunity?
What do you mean? What's my opportunity?
You said you had your opportunity a while back and it didn't work out the way you wanted it to.
Well, you know, with the music and stuff, it ended in 97. The band ended. So I hung the guitars up. I didn't want to touch them. I didn't want to do music other than being a part of other people's music and correcting them, making them better, and getting them shows and booking them, getting them promotions through media.
Did the band not end well?
Yeah, it didn't go too good. Not at all. So that's a divorce. That was an ugly divorce. And it is what it is, I guess. And we started in 85 and it lasted until 97.
I mean, that's a good run, but there's a young lady, she's 20 years old, and she has been in a band for like 4 years. And her band it's interesting. She's Christian. The band isn't, but she's very punk. Like it's a punk band. She's like, Jesus is punk and blah, 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 blah. So, but apparently because of the division in their, in their belief system, the band started calling her dangerous and blah, 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 blah. And so they basically kicked her out the day of a gig.
Yeah.
And I know her, she's been a guest on the show. So I talked to her about it. And, dude, I've never been in a long-term band, so I don't know, but apparently it by the sounds of it, it's devastating when it can be.
Yeah, it hurt me pretty good because, you know, I wrote the music, the singer put the lyrics to it and the drummer did his job and stuff. And then just to get the carpet pulled out from under you and you have all these expectations of your music going somewhere and it just stops immediately. It's like a freight train hitting a tree or, you know, something like it's just, whoa, kind of takes your breath away, definitely.
Did you tour?
No, we just played around Michigan here.
Yeah.
Because the one member was a complete idiot and a drunk.
Oh, that'll hold you back a little bit.
That'll hold you back. Go ahead. Yeah. If you got druggies or drunks in your band, get them out.
did he play drunk?
Yeah, he was a guitar player, but there was a couple of shows that we did, and we'd be playing, and then he would start using foul language in the songs, and it's like, lights go on, music gets shut off, and we get kicked out, and it's like, come on. We don't need this.
No, you don't need that, man. you don't like playing out anymore, though?
It's not that I don't like it, I just don't look for it. If I was to find a couple of guys, I'd probably play out, but it's nothing that I'm serious about right now because I'm so busy at what I do with us promoting the music and all the artists.
Yeah. What, so when you write, is it you writing? Do you channel it? Do you meet the muse and fight it out? Are you given it? What's your process?
Oh, wow. Back in the day, fortunately, sometimes alcohol played a big part in writing. But no, it's, you know, I wrote all music on the acoustic guitar, nothing with the electric. So
As it should be.
Right. I agree with you, John. So, you know, I never came up with anything in my head. I would just more or less turn the lights off so I could play in the dark. And I just start playing chords and playing 50, 100 different chords. Finally, some things just sounded good together. And so I would channel those sounds together, and then I'd kind of get a song out of that, dump it over here, go on, because I didn't put the lyrics to the music. The singer did that. I just brought the music.
But you had a melody line.
Yeah, I would have the name of the song, and then the singer would go around that, you know.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Is it hard to hand that off?
No, actually, we worked pretty good. The singer was a great poet, and he sounded like Neil Young. He was just fabulous.
Man. Yeah. So what do you... I have a theory. I'll run it past you. You tell me if you think I'm right.
Okay.
My theory is that singer-songwriters that one guitar and a guy, or girl, or whatever, and or bands are going to be the last people working because of AI, because you can't duplicate that, and so I think, oddly enough, when your mom told you there's no money in playing guitar, there might be.
There might be, right.
You have to wait till a computer can do it too, and then get compared.
Right, yeah. My mom's idea for me was just to work in a factory and take care of her whole life. That didn't work. Yeah, I mean, I took care of her, but
The TV show, how did that start?
Actually, when the band broke up, me and the singer, we were still friends. So I thought, let's do this TV thing. So it was the public access in our town, the local community TV. So we took classes. I continued to take classes. And I started a TV show. And the first show in 97 was called Big Al's World of the Weird. I just wanted to bring on anything that was freaky, that would scare you, mess you up, upset the town. And it did a very good job at that for about 2-3 years. And I also brought bands in occasionally.
Right. Did that make it hard to go grocery shopping when you're upsetting a whole town and then you need milk?
Yeah, people would notice me in the store and yell out my name, and it's like, you don't know who it is, and they come running up to you, and thank God they're all good people. But the one show I had a problem with our local mayor, and I chewed him a new a-hole, and he contacted the station, of course, wanted me canceled and all that, but I know the rules of public access and freedom of speech. He couldn't do nothing. So right. He just wallow in what he was said about.
that's interesting, because I've been doing this show and this is my fourth year. First couple of years, I was someplace else doing the show, but I always a podcast, but it was internet radio too. All and, right. You know, the idea was, it, it's the internet, it's not regulated, you can do what you want, you don't have a boss, there's no, and I jumped in thinking, oh wow, that's so great, and for the most part it is.
Yeah.
But I had a Republican on my show,
Ben.
Yeah, which I'm not a Republican, but I learn from Republicans, and I have like a regular. He was a candidate for Senate here in New York, and he's a Republican, and he's on like every third week we do a show just to talk about stuff, just to prove it can be done civilly. So, and this person who I had on was actually a really good friend of mine from Texas, and she's a pundit, and so she came on, and she espoused her views, which is great, man. That's how it's supposed to be, right? You're supposed to be able to say what you think. And not eat bat guano because of it. they wouldn't air the show. They called me on like a Tuesday. And said, yeah, we're not putting it up. I quit that day.
Oh,
but no, I did. I quit that day because that made me insane. But one of the thoughts I had was what you just said. Like, wow, if we were regulated.
Yeah, I wasn't.
right. But if we, but if we, but then at least we'd have the protection of, you know, like you said, a right of free speech and blah, blah. Right. At least right. I'd have a claim there.
Right. With the community access, there's a fine line that you can't cross. I mean, you can't show anything sexual or any orientation like that. You can't do racist stuff like that. And you cannot promote products or do commercials and make money in any way like that. So I did a show. It was a tattoo piercing show. So I had my buddy that's a tattoo artist, a female that's a piercer. And my guy had co-host at the time, female co-host Alpha on. And so they suggested, how about we pierce the co-host's nipple on TV? Well, that's a fine line, but I can get away with it because it's a surgical procedure.
Ooh.
So for 45 minutes, Grand Rapids, Michigan saw a girl's boobie on TV. And, you know, there was some complaints. There was a lot of people that loved it. But they couldn't do nothing to me. But on the other end, my friend out of the band, that he also put his own show together. Now, he's a little more nuttier than I am. He figured, okay, well, if Big Al can show a boob on TV, well, I can dress my pecker up like a puppet and shoot it on TV and show it.
If you want to, sure.
What? And he said, you know, he tells me to come over to his house. See, I got to show you something. So I go and he pops that tape and I look at it. I laughed my ass off. I was on the floor laughing my ass off. And so he did turn it into the TV show. They aired it. Well, the wrong people saw it. And, of course, he got in trouble with the government, the law, and everything like that. And had to was removed from the TV. So.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you said drinking helped you write songs?
To a point sometimes, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I partied. I had my days, but I wasn't, you know, drunk some that bad sometimes. But it was nice to be able to relax and and be able to just sit back and just let the chords go.
Right.
And they just found each other. Yeah.
Did you? So you're in a band for 12 years. You must have. If you didn't do it yourself, you must have seen stuff.
No, seen it all.
Did you have groupies?
Did I have what?
Groupies.
Yeah, there was a few of them. We just call them highly energized fans. Yeah.
Overly dedicated.
Overly dedicated, right. Yeah. I ran into that more when I was booking, you know, working with the bigger bands and stuff.
Right. What's that like working with bigger bands?
The logistics is crazy. But it's a great time when you can soak it all in from being backstage, under the stage, watching the whole production, you know, being put together, being tore down, the whole show itself, and what the artist goes through. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, very interesting.
Did that ever strike you? Like, I want to get back into it and get to that level? And
well, I'm at that level. So I've booked arenas in bigger venues and small venues. I've worked with everybody out there. Let's see, Ted Nugent, Bret Michaels, Judas Priest, of course, and then Rascal Flatts.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. And so what you booked them? You're like a booking agent?
I am a booking agent for other acts, but they would come in town and I'd be called in through the venue to more or less kind of oversee a lot of the logistics of what's going on, because it's a big, I hate to say it, clusterfuck. So, right. I mean, you got to make sure everybody's where they're supposed to be, security. I teach the walk and talk procedures with security guards. You don't have to be a big, bulk, hulky guy to be security. Just talk to the people, and as you're talking to them, start walking, and they start backing up. Before you know it, they're out the door, and you don't have to touch them.
Oh, nice. One of my dear, dear friends is a security guard for concerts, and she is like 4'10". and she says the same thing. The job is all talk. It's all talk.
You just got to be able to get in their head and just find a spot that they can cling to and connect to, and then you just walk them right out.
Right. So you're like a producer almost.
I am a producer, yeah.
There you go. Okay. All right. Cool. Now I get it. And are you married?
Yep.
How long?
We got married in 2020, but we've been together since 2009.
So you had a wife prior, or no?
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, and got divorced. And then I hooked up with my wife here back in 2009. And then we've been together ever since. We got married in 2020. So we've been married 4 years together, 15.
Nice, man. Congratulations. What's the trick? Share what the trick is, bro.
Love, smile, and never fight.
You never fight?
We've never fought. She might get a little upset, and I might get a little upset, but we don't fight.
Right.
I've been in that crap before. It don't get nowhere, and it just hurts the other person, so why do it?
Yeah. You know what? It's funny, because my wife and I used to go at it, like, really hard, and we're together, like, 25 years now, but we used to go at it, like, really hard, and then she got this head and neck cancer, and she had like that whole journey. And when we got out of the woods with that, there's nothing worth fighting over. There's just nothing worth fighting over.
It's not worth it, man.
Right? No. And even like when it gets like you said, when you get upset or something heats up a little bit, you just kind of instantly go to that place of, dude, really, this is what you're going to get out about after what you just said, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. So. Yeah, I think it was just the other day she got mad at me because I ate her cookie. I was my butt kicked for that one. I was like, oh.
in fairness to your wife,
don't leave food around me. I'm going to grab it.
See, in my house, that's a very safe thing to do because I'm like so allergic to dairy, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
Yeah, like really allergic to dairy. I'm like, I eat clean 29 out of 30 days of a month, meaning like just protein.
That's great.
And so, you can leave a cake. There's two cakes out in my kitchen island right now, and all I can do is look at them.
I have a problem with M&M's for some reason. It's like every day I got to have my little pack of M&M's, and it's like, I got to stop that stuff.
Do you exercise? Yeah.
To a point, I walk the dog and I'm around the yard. We're going to be joining the gym here shortly because it's winter time. So,
yeah, man. So yeah. How often do you play now? Do you play every day still or?
Yeah, I try to put in an hour, maybe two, and
with
on my acoustic. And I just go over all the old songs that I wrote and then try to come up with a few new ones, different ones and stuff like that.
So you're still writing?
I guess you could say to a point. Yeah,
that's what coming up with a new song is.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, I don't have lyrics for it, but I have a name for them.
have you ever tried to do lyrics?
Yeah, that was back in 1987 at a bar in Pocono Mountains, and had a few drinks and got a napkin and a pen from the waitress and wrote my teardrop song on a napkin.
Was it good?
Well, I don't know, actually. I won't share it.
Yeah. And so that's so funny. Like, have you ever written anything that's better than what you can write?
Have I written anything better than I could write?
Meaning, like, you sit there and you go, there's no way I just did that.
Yeah, there's probably one song, I think, and that the song was named was called Dying.
Okay.
So that I don't even know how I came up with the chords, and then as soon as I stopped playing and wanted to replay, I was like, I forgot. I don't even know what I did because I was going through so many chords
right.
with my eyes closed, and so then I had to go back and find it. It didn't take too long, but that's a cool song, but a little long.
Oh, is it out there somewhere? Is it recorded?
It's on cassette somewhere.
Huh.
I remember.
The last cassette I had, this is hilarious. The last cassette, so I went to college in Iowa, right?
Okay.
So I leave, I fall in love with a girl, I graduate, come back north, right? After 4 years, I come back north.
Sure.
And I'm here. And she's out there. And it's like a week, and I can't take it.
No.
So I buy an AMC Pacer with a hole in the floor so that you can see the highway underneath you.
Right.
And but it had no stereo. I couldn't afford one with a stereo. It had no stereo. The radio didn't. So I got a boom box and a box of D batteries because that's what they took. And Tina Turner's Tiny Dancer album, but on a cassette, and played that 24 hours out and 24 hours back. And it was so funny. I was driving with my, there's a picture of it somewhere. I'm driving right with my left arm out the window and driving my right in. And I did that for like a full day. And I'm like so consumed with just getting out to see her and think, am I tiny dancer dancing for my
tiny dancer, oh boy.
I pull my arm in and there's like bubbles on it. I had such bad sunburn. There's like bubbles on my arm. And that's the last cassette I ever bought.
That's the last cassette you ever bought. That's funny.
that was brutal, man.
Oh man, I love the cassettes.
What do you think the future of the music business is?
Well, honest opinion, it's oversaturated because anybody can be an artist right now. Right. All these programs that you can just download on your computer, put a backing track, enhance your vocals, sing a song, somebody else's song or whatever, go ahead, shoot it to Spotify, wherever you want. And it's like, well, wait a minute here. You know, I've been doing this over 40 years. Other people have been doing it longer or even, you know. And to me, I feel like you got to pay your dues a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to be a musician and artist, not a karaoke singer. I'm sorry if I'm offending people out there, but, you know, a true musician is a musician that takes it to heart, works at their skill, hones their skill, and it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't. Now, if you want to be that famous karaoke star, that is beautiful. That is wonderful. Be what you can be. But, you know, I like past days where we had to hump it and we had to get people into our shows and stuff. And now I just can push a couple buttons. My music is everywhere around the world for everybody here, which is a cool thing, I think, because you can reach everybody around the world. But as it's, you know, the internet has taken a lot away from the musicians.
Yeah.
You know, it's hindered us.
You know? It's. I've been on this rant lately. So I had this one band on the show. Because you said you got to put the work in, yeah. Right? And I agree. I think music is as much of an art form as it is, it's also a discipline. And so I'm talking to the guitar player and I go, how often do you practice? And he's like, I never practice. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I play for me. I'm out. I have fun. He goes, I know the songs we play. I play for me. And I'm like, so you're never going to get better.
Right.
And worse than that, because maybe I don't even know what better is, but you're never going to get better. And you're also never going to be different because you know the way you play and you're just going to do that from now on. So then I pissed him off. So then I said to him, so I should see you this month. He goes, yeah, you should see me this month. And I go, well, and then never again. And he's like, why? I'm like, because I've seen what you can do. Never going to get any better. Why would I see you?
Right, yeah, you see it once, why? Yeah, if you can't experiment, because the guitar is ever-ending. You never will learn the guitar completely.
Mm-hmm.
You always learn all instruments, I would say. You got to practice, most definitely, on your skill line.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I bet you have this too. I've developed two kind of radars when I'm watching a band. One, I can tell instantly if a band's playing for them or for the audience.
Right.
And you should play for yourself in rehearsal, but when you're performing, you should be playing for an audience. A, and B, I can tell lead singers who never sang in a choir.
Oh right! Oh yeah! Oh yeah!
Right? You know exactly what I'm talking about. Right?
You can hear that. Oh yeah!
Yeah, yeah, man. Both of those make me crazy.
Yeah, me too. I was just saying, I try to give a band that's not so great some positive influences without hurting her feelings, you know, kind of make the bad into a good and turn it around a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Because I know they're trying.
Yeah. Yeah. But, doesn't that break your heart when you know somebody wants it so bad, but, you know, I know how bad you want it, but it's not your past. And, yeah,
I've ran into several people like that. Yeah,
yeah. That's that. I thankfully was never cursed with that, but I've always considered that a curse. If the thing you want to do most in the world you're not good at, that's a horrible curse.
It is. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Did you ever do drugs?
Oh yeah, I've experimented. Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest drug you ever took?
Biggest drug I ever took. I don't think I'll say it on here, honestly, but I've experimented.
So big is what.
So I wouldn't go that bad. Well, I'll say this. I've never put a needle in my arm and never would.
There you go. Okay. All right. So the biggest drug I'm not a, never did drugs. Never experimented. I have a curse because I'm like a James Taylor knockoff. It's just me and a guitar. Right. There's no band. It's me and a guitar. And it's all sad songs, so I'm hard to watch. But because of that, I never had, like, you know, band influence and all that stuff. So it was very easy to never do a drug. So now me and Trish is my wife. We're decided, all right, we're gonna have a kid. We're gonna start trying to have a kid.
All right.
Neither one of us ever tried pot.
Oh, okay.
So we're like, dude, we gotta at least try pot. So we can tell her we did. You can't be that square. Now I drank like a shit house. So I have millions of stories there, but I never a drug, never even pot. So I knew, I have a chef friend, right? So I go to my chef friend and I go, hey, because I know he smokes. I'm like, hey, I want to try pot. He goes, do me a favor. Go to your back door tonight and there'll be pot. And now I was a pipe smoker, like a real pipe. He goes, okay. You have pipes, right? So I took him to mean, yeah, I have pipes. But like I have these big meerschaum pipes.
Right, oh yeah.
So I opened the door that night and there's a bag, you know, there's a glad bag full of, and I'm like, okay. Now, when you, and so I get Trish, and I know when you ever smoke a regular pipe?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So you know, you tap it down, you smoke through the bowl. That's a half hour, 4 or 5 minutes. You reload it, you smoke through the bowl. And on a good night, you can bang through like almost a bag of tobacco, right?
Right.
And if there's two of you smoking the same pipe, you can bang through a bag of tobacco, right? Well, this night, nobody told me how to smoke pot. So so I just thought, oh. And I'd seen people, you know, hold it in. So I held it in for a little bit. Like, I knew you inhaled, like a pipe you don't inhale. I knew you inhaled pot. So I inhaled it. Trish and I bang out the whole bag.
Oh, Jesus.
Lay down on the floor Saturday night at 10:30. Didn't get up till Sunday afternoon at like 2:30.
No.
Didn't have a clear thought till Monday morning. And so I call him. I'm like, what was in that pot you gave me? And he's like, what do you mean? It was pot. And what was in it? I said, I lost 2 days. And he's like, how much did you smoke? I'm like, I smoked the whole thing. And he's like, dude, that was a month.
It was much worth it, right? John, let's go. Oh, man.
Yep. Last time I tried pot, man.
Oh, man. I started, partying early. I mean, I was probably 13 when I started drinking. So I ended it pretty early in the 20s.
Right.
So I guess just got old, you know. The beer didn't taste good anymore. The hangovers weren't worth it. Just being stupid wasn't worth it.
Yeah. How'd you quit?
Cold turkey.
Cold turkey. Stop. But no group, no support?
No, not at all.
No. Wow. Did you... And how long ago did you quit?
I was probably, with the drinking, I probably slowed right down to nil about 25, 26.
Oh, wow.
So now I drink here and there. I don't drink to party.
Right. See, that's funny. So you're able to have one.
Oh, yeah. If that. Sometimes I don't even care to have it. No.
Right. And then the drugs thing was just like a phase, and then you said, I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, you know, if we're playing music or something, yeah, we had the pot. That was always around. Right. And sometimes there was blow and stuff like that. So it was just here and there. It wasn't something that, you know, I was doing every day and addicted for a long time or something like that.
Right. That's good. And how's your mental health?
Oh, real good. Real sharp as a arrow.
Awesome. And was it always thus?
Yeah, I've been through hell and back in life, but I've always been able to keep my mind pretty good.
What's the hell and back?
Oh my God, you got another day or two for that?
you're long form, man.
How can I do? Well, short stories. Well, I've been through quite a bit. I mean, only child, mean mother. She didn't like me. She didn't want me. She would tell me all the time how much she hated me and stuff like that when I'm a little kid.
She hated you?
Oh, yeah. So it was a lot of verbal, mental abuse, of course, the physical abuse with her. And that started from young all the way till.
Me too. And it's such a mind when a woman hits you because you can't hit back.
Well, exactly. Well,
I know from that. Yeah.
Yeah, she, it was, I think, we lived with my grandmother, and mother went to work before I went to school and came home after I came home. So the only time I'd get laid out is there in the evening or on the weekends, pretty much, because I never was at home. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, we were out all night, you know, if we could.
Right.
I think it was 14 years old. She was slapping the living crap out of me, yelling at me. And I snapped. I picked her up by the arms. I slammed her up against the wall. And she's going, hit me. I'll have your uncles and cousins over here to kick your fucking ass and all this. And my grandma's tapping my arm, put it out. You do not want to do this. So I dropped her. So she fell down on the floor. I walked to my bedroom. We probably didn't speak for 2 weeks. But right then, I think I gained a little respect. Fuck with me. Keep fucking with me. And you're going to see what's going to happen.
Yep. I have a similar story. But it ended different. One day, I was just so fucking tired of getting my bell rung that I pushed her and she tripped and fell into a cabinet, broke the cabinet door with her head. But she was so drunk, she sat up laughing. And I was like, holy fuck, I'm never going to be able to, you know, I'm just never going to be able to. So, but then I came home, I had a dog. So now I'm like 14, it's interesting, same age as you. And I'm walking up the driveway and I see my mother and she just kind of, I don't remember whether she kicked or pushed the dog, but she did something I didn't like with the dog. I wouldn't hit my mother, but I went balls out on my dad. And from that day on, the hitting stopped because it was like, wait a second, you know.
You're right. You just push somebody too far and they will snap. I don't know how they snap, but yeah, I lost it. Of course, she always said, you ever pierce your ear, get a tattoo, you're out of the house. So, 18, I pierced my ears and got bags and left.
Where'd you go?
We just got an apartment and stuff in town here. And then about a year or two later, went to move to Poconos in Pennsylvania there. Worked in sales and stuff for a few years.
Yeah. So then you had to take care of that same mother. Do I have that right?
Oh, yeah. She was a living hell till she died. Oh, yeah.
How was she rough at the end?
She still had a right mind till the end. She broke her hip and then went to the hospital and break down from that point. But still, she was a very narcissistic person. She would cut you down, put me down, say all these rude things. If there was ever a girlfriend or like my wife in my life, she did everything she could to try to break us up, say bad things about me to her, which would never be true. She just was that way. And I never told anybody, but, you know, I could never really hug my mother. And I've never gotten I love you pretty much. But when I would go to hug her, she liked to grope me. So it was like, my wife has seen it many times. So I just pushed her away. She's a little, I kind of set her away. And I just wouldn't hug my mother. You know, she'd want me to hug her, but no, because I know what's going to happen.
That's so mentally complicated, so emotionally complicated, because you're a kid. You're craving affection. That's what the animal is. You're craving affection. Your mother's already touching you in an unacceptable way when she hits you. And now, but that's violence. And now she's trying to, like, I can't even imagine trying to sort that out.
Yeah, I don't know if I really sorted out, you know, all the crap from when I was little to now. If it, bad stuff like her hate and stuff like that, hate has actually made me a better person, a stronger person, a nicer person, a person who cares about people. Where my mother didn't give a shit about anybody but herself. And same with my father. You know, when I finally got to meet him, he was just a big asshole too. So,
kiss my soul. How old were you when you met him?
It was 1994, so what was I, 30 or something? I found him in Seattle, Washington. So I drove out there unannounced, and I knocked on his door, and his wife answered, "Who are you?" "Well, what? I'm Albert Brady's son." So they shit their pants on that one.
What was it like when you met him?
It was interesting. It was a good feeling. He wanted to see me and stuff, but the wife, she didn't like me one bit. She wanted to see my driver's license just to prove who I was, so I showed her, and she just didn't have any kind words for me, so I just said, and of course, he didn't say a word or stick up for me, so I just said, it's nice meeting you. Finally got to meet you. Have a good life. And that was the last time I saw him.
It's just the one day?
No, I was there a week.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you stayed a week. Okay. Over a week. Yeah. Did you get to know him at all?
Just as much as I wanted to. That was good enough for me.
Fair enough, man.
Yeah.
Did he explain why he left?
Yeah, I know why he left, because my mom was a bitch.
Oh, right. Okay.
If I could have left her, I would have too. That's why I got moving out of state.
Right, man. Well, that kind of, on that one thing, you and your father could kind of...
That's the only thing, yeah, we could relate upon.
Well, so catch the... catch this. So I'm an orphan, foster kid, get adopted, blah, blah. Never cared to find my parents at all. Last year, my wife Trish gives me ancestry DNA, right?
Oh, I am.
And like, I'm like, there's no way this ends well. But whatever. But, you know, I wanted to know my ethnicity because we have a daughter. And I'm like, there's no way this ends well. So I'm like, okay. I have been avoiding it. You're like, you're a brave guy. You found him and drove out and said, "Hey, you know, I need a face to face here." Ducked it. Like for 60 years, I ducked it, which is, that's a long duck.
That is a long duck.
So I get to, so I take the test, come back, and you ever do ancestry DNA?
We did it. Yep.
Okay. So, you know, there's a site and you put your stuff in. All of a sudden, this one woman pops out as a match, and I write her and I'm like, "I'm your brother," and I'm just throwing it, you know, and just throwing it out there. Her name is Debbie. She's the nicest person in the world. Then 2 days later, another match shows up, Kim, who lives 40 minutes from me. I write her, I'm like, "I'm your brother," and she knows Debbie, and nicest person in the world, comes to my shows because she's around, and you know, sends me gifts every day. Then I meet a brother. Then I meet another sister who's in Texas, I think. And then I meet a niece. I have two nieces who are 30 years old and African American.
Wow.
So now I'm like, all right, I got to find out about my mom and dad. So my mom is very, so my dad, this is my dad's story. I think his life goal was just to impregnate as many people as possible. This is the best story I can tell you about my dad. He's 17 years old. He goes to the Navy, right? At 17 years old, he leaves the Navy. Something goes wrong. Goes to work in a Turkish bathhouse.
Oh, uh-huh.
He makes national news in the following way. And you can Google him. He's all over. This is a national news story. He and two buddies decide that they're going to concoct this plot where the two buddies come in, fake kidnap him, and run through all the lockers while the people are in the Turkish bath and steal all the lockers, right? So this is the middle of Manhattan. They break and they fake kidnap him. They steal all the lockers. They drive to upstate New York, town by the Poconos. This is January. It's 27 degrees outside. He gets out in sleeveless t-shirt, goes to the police, and says, "I was just kidnapped, and these two guys just dropped me off here." Well, of course, the police sent a car immediately.
Oh, yeah.
They catch the two guys in the car, they all start ratting on each other.
Oh, yeah, but
within 4 hours, they're all in cuff. And my father makes the front page of the Daily News and the Times, handcuffed to a radiator, and some town goes to the Poconos over this like fake kidnapping to Turkey's Bath. I'm like, yeah, that's so proud.
That's funny. That's great.
Horrible. Horrible, man. But I did find great people. But and then yeah. So do you have like stepbrothers and stepsisters from your?
Yeah, I do have a stepbrother. He's in Seattle. A stepsister. She just moved from Michigan to New Mexico. I have another stepsister in Alabama, and there's supposed to be another one out there, but we haven't found her, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Do you get along with any of them, or?
I don't talk to my stepbrother. My sister, I talk to once in a while. It's in New Mexico. Yeah.
Right. So was that the hardest part? Was just reconciling this whole family mess?
It wasn't really any reconciling. It was just me and each other, and that was about it. You know, I never knew, I never grew up with them, so it just wasn't. It wasn't very meaningful to me. I just want to meet you, see you, know a little bit about you, and I'm good.
Right. You
know, we talk once a year. That's fine with me. If we don't, I'm all right too.
Right. Was that the hardest thing you ever did?
No.
What's the hardest thing you ever did?
Well, believe me, when I went to go find my dad, the hardest thing was to go up and knock on that front door. It took me 3 days. I parked in front of that house for 3 days, contemplating, what do I do? What do I say? And then I finally, on that third day, walked up the door and just did it. You know, I didn't know what to expect.
Oh.
I know if I would have the right house, honestly.
Right. That would have been bad if you showed your license and the guy walks out to the, oh, look, I think we've made a mistake.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's so, I'm glad it went well for what it was, I guess.
Man. that's incredible, man. Mm, I mean, yeah. I'm proud of you that's like having that abusive of a relationship with your mother to then just, you know, to then go out and seek your father, have the courage to go out and seek your father. That's really cool. I don't think I could have done that.
I've always been able to, you know, fly off the seat of my pants and just do about anything. And that, you know, nothing scares me really to go somewhere, do something, just pack up the Jeep or whatever vehicle and just go. Cause I'm a tradesman, so I can get a job anywhere. So, you know, I'm good to go. Yeah.
Yeah, but but that's not a trade. That's like emotional guts to just, you know, to be sexually abused is probably the biggest mind F from your mother. It's possible to be able to sort through that and have a successful relationship now. That's a process, man. How'd you do that?
A lot of hit and miss. I mean, there was other things that happened when I was younger. And like I said, the hate made me stronger, made me determined that every dream that I had as being an only child sitting in my bed looking at the ceiling at night, you know, crying my eyes out because of what I just went through. Every dream that I thought of, I promised myself I'd make come true. And I have done that. And that's that I'm proud of. You know, her hate, my father's hate, the other stuff people put me through just made me stronger. I wouldn't say meaner, but determined.
Right.
You know, determined. Your hate is not going to stop me. That's your problem, not my problem.
That's incredible wisdom for a kid. Like, I get it at our age now. But where did that come from? Because it ain't genetic because...
Right. It's just the constant being belittled, hit, the mind fuck, all of that. And then when I was a teenager, I had the very bad acne and stuff. So, of course, you know, I'd be in fights all the time and being name called in high school. I was like, give me a break. I got to deal with this when I go home. Now I got to go to school and deal with this. So yeah. I just couldn't wait till I graduated, get out there, do my job and travel and do what I do best in my music.
Right. Bullying, basically.
No, a lot of bullying. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fights.
How are you not an asshole?
Well, I am. I hate everybody.
did you ever act out because of all this?
The only time it would come out if I was in a bar fight or something like that. Somebody starts a fight, I'm going to finish it. So, yeah, that's when it would come out.
Oh, are you good at that?
I would say so. Yeah, I was a boxer and stuff, yeah.
Oh, you boxed?
Yeah, back when I was young.
Oh, can you still do it? You don't train anymore, though?
No, I don't train anymore. It hurts.
So boxing was like boxing was like a conduit, man, because you carry that stuff in your body, right? That yeah. And so boxing release for you. I mean, it's a little cliche, but cliche because it works, right?
Yeah, my mother had a boyfriend at the time. He was an Italian. His name was Angelo Vito Mazzarelli Jr. And he was pretty bigwig in this town. He owned a bowling alley and bar and stuff. And he took me under his wing. So he got me away from my mother, taught me Golden Gloves boxing, put me to work in the bowling alley when I'm 11, 12 years old, working on the bowling machines and oil on the lanes and doing things like that. He kept me away from my mom as much as possible because he knew what she would do and stuff like that.
At the same time, he's dating her?
Yeah, they were, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. They were together for 10, 15 years almost, yeah. Because he was a stubborn Italian, so she couldn't get to him.
Yeah, but then again, I don't understand how you have the clarity you do. So that's kind of, that's the only parent you really had, question mark, right?
Was my mother, yes.
No, your stepdad was like the...
Oh, yeah, because I, you know, got me jobs and I was connected with a lot of the people in town and stuff.
Yeah, so the only decent adult you knew who could impact your life in any way, and it sounds like he went out of his way to do it.
It was great, yeah.
That's so complicated because then you see him in a close relationship with the person that you love, hate the most in the world, yet he's also the best person in your life.
Right. Yeah, like I said, she didn't mess with him because he knew what he was about, you know, a stubborn Italian. But yeah, you know, at work, you know, he'd throw me the keys to the Cadillac. Go do this. Go have fun. Enjoy. Come on back. And just don't smash the car or anything like that. I mean, it was real good. I got to hang around the guys and stuff. And it was, you know, serve them drinks at the poker games and things like that. So it was a lot of fun.
And I mean, that's a real blessing because then you at least get to see what some level of normalcy is.
Yeah, well, I don't know if those cronies were all normal, but yeah, I got to see a little bit of it, I guess.
You got to see, like, just the gift of, because I have a feeling for, like, I got hit when I never got groped, but I got hit a metric fuck ton. And I used to go to other people's houses and just be awed at, like, how it works. Like, these people know how to, like, have dinner. These people know how to, ask how your day was and look at your homework and make you practice the trumpet and you know, care what you're thinking or saying.
Right. So, now, so if you got a second, I'll show you a picture. Can I grab it?
Yes, please, yeah.
Al, I will try to show you. This right here is a picture of them.
Oh, my God.
These are the cronies. Angelo is right there.
You're saying cronies. I'm saying mob.
I'm not going to use that word, but yes.
This is the greatest life I've ever heard. You're getting the S kicked out of you in the most complicated mother son relationship in the history of the free world. Your dad jumps. the male role model you have, who probably saved you your mental life.
What?
May or may not have lent people a lot of money at some point and then wanted it back. That's incredible. But but okay. So I've had friends like that too, and I've learned from them. You learn what loyalty is.
Oh yeah.
You learn what generosity is. You learn what safe place is. You learn what ball busting is.
And when we first got together, he pulled me aside and he says, "There's two words you're going to listen to, and you're going to respect them." The two words are respect and common sense. You use those two words throughout your life, you will have everything you ever want. So those are two words I apply to everything I do. And wow. He gave me an example, which I couldn't believe was an example. He says, "Let's go with respect and common sense. We're going to rob a bank. How are we going to do that?" Okay. So he brings up robbing a bank. You case it out. You check out the weak points. Check out the strong points. How you can get in and get out real quick. And so he went in great detail how to respect and use common sense in robbing a bank, which I've never done, people. I've never robbed a bank, but I know how. So that's how I learned those two words. Yeah.
Wow. Is he still alive now?
No, he's passed. He passed in, 2006 or 2008, I think it was, something like that.
Man. So you go through this amazing just amazing childhood where you're being taught how to be a man from somebody who, you know, maybe on the fringes, but still gives you super valuable lessons.
Oh yeah.
But you're kind of like me. You're kind of like you're 18 years old. There's no place to, there's no going to college and coming back home. There, you don't have like a belongings. What do you do?
Right. Yeah. Well, I've always bought houses, or as soon as I was 18, 20, I bought my first home. And so I always had homes when I come back to Michigan. I always buy a home. I don't stay in apartments and stuff like that. So I accumulate stuff over the years. And yeah. So when I do move around, though, I either store it or sell it.
Right. How did you make money though when you said 18 I'm out? How did you make money?
When I left, I was a machinist and certified welder, TIG welder. So I was making good money at factories and things like that. I also managed restaurants and did things like that too. Worked in sales.
Did he teach you business too?
I would say streetwise business. Oh, yeah.
Maybe the only real business there is.
Yeah. And he gave me an opportunity back when I was young to make a couple bucks. I don't even know if I want to tell this story. Oh, my God. Okay. I was working at the bowling alley, and they sell liquor. There's a bar in the back. There's a bar in the front. The bar in the back is never open unless there's bowling. Well, I'm working, and there ain't no bowling. Well, he handed around that. There's booze that's considered old stock and we don't miss it. Kind of, gave me that little eye look. So I thought about it. I think, oh. So I went around to my friends in high school, said, you like liquor? What do you want? So I take their orders, go to the, work, put a couple of bottles in the trash can, bring the trash can to the dumpster. When I left, grabbed them out of the dumpster, brought them home, put them in my duffel bag, walked them to school, put them in the lockers, and collected my money.
Good money.
So that was my part-time job, I guess.
Did he ever hear you play?
Just probably on my acoustics in the home. Let's see. He never saw the band, no. Or maybe, I don't know if he did or not. I can't remember. He might have. No, I don't think he did.
So then 20s and 30s are just pretty much all music and...
Yeah, I was out in Pennsylvania for a couple of years, met my ex-wife, we came back and divorced in 94, and then I started the TV show up, and then I took a break in 2000, went out to California to do some work, and that didn't go so well, so then I came back here and...
What happened in California?
Oh, boy, how much time we got?
You got time.
Well, something happened out there that... probably happens quite often, but something I've never heard of and most people don't hear of. And it was a very terrible thing. And like I said before, when we were talking, I shouldn't be sitting here because of this situation. But when I moved to California, I was staying in a hotel, trying to find a place to stay. Well, most people out there rent rooms out from their homes and stuff like that. So I was looking at different rooms and stuff and found one. And over time, things were just a little different. The owner was a little different and weird. And, I was going to work, doing my thing, getting up at 5, getting to work by 6 and doing my job. But then over a while, I just felt exhausted. I couldn't think straight. And it was a Thanksgiving, 2000, Thanksgiving Day. And they said, why don't you join us for something to eat? Because I didn't have any family or friends out there. So, they were having Kentucky Fried Chicken. So I said, sure. So I ate the food and drank the drink, and I don't remember anything after that. Other than waking up in a bed in my underwear, being abused. Ugh. I couldn't move. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'2". I'm a fighter. And these people drugged me so bad. And beat the living shit out of me, would electrocute me with a cattle prod every day. And it went on for 2 weeks. After the first week, I wrote my life off. I wasn't going to survive this, but I was going to fight in every way I could possibly fight. So I had to lose. What hurt me the most is put my Christianity aside. I had to put my thoughts about love, anything that was good, I had to get it out of my head. I had to become them. Because I figured if they're going to fuck with my mind with what they're doing, I got to try to fuck with them back. I got to hurt them somehow before I die. And I think they got so, because they were beating me even harder because I just, I guess, enticed it. And it was a Friday, like 2 or 3 weeks later. They just walked in the room with a gun to my face, get the fuck out. It's like, okay, let's do this. But I was so fucked up because they were drugging me. And I put tattoos over the holes where they used to inject me.
Jesus.
And I escaped. It took me almost, I would say, 2 weeks to figure out where home was, what happened to us. And so, you know, So it fucked me up. Couldn't sleep. Couldn't stop thinking about it. Couldn't stop hurting.
Of course.
So I went to talk to somebody, and they pulled me aside after a session and said, we're going to test you. You've got severe PTSD, and you got to stop working. So they put me on disability because of what I go through, and nights are hell for me. You know?
Still.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I used to wake up quite often screaming and yelling and fighting, and now it's occasionally, maybe once or twice a month, that I'll jump up screaming and fighting, and my wife will, you know, grab me and calm me down and bring me down or something like that. You know, or the crying spells.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, it was hard. I mean, there's a lot more detail that I'm not going to go into, but that's the gist of what happened.
How did it feel to finally push back?
All the time I could push back felt great. Thought I was kind of winning a little bit, but they would nail me back 10 feet. I move ahead 10 feet. They knock me back 20 feet. So I was just trying to catch up, trying to stay away, trying to stay alive.
And these are just malignant fucks who just you rented from, who just because they had numbers, just did what they, Charles Manson shit.
Yeah, they said they did what they did. So they, few people that they did it to, we were able to get into their bank accounts, take homes and money and things like that. Which they didn't get that out of me or anything like that.
So almost like a cult, kind of.
Yeah. What the doctors described it as is I went through ritual abuse.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I've never heard of ritual abuse, but you know, I've read everything about it now, so I know definitely what it's about, and that's what I go through. Yeah.
And so you agree that that's what you went through?
100%. 100%.
Man.
Go ahead. I just never, you know. I thought I knew it all. You know, I'm a cocky person. I've been through it all in my life. Figured I knew it. And here these people got me, blindsided me by drugging me. And I didn't, you know, sometimes I blame myself because, you know, I'm a big boy. You know, I should have known better to take food from a stranger or something like that.
But they weren't strangers.
Yeah.
B, you know, you're living with them. B, right. It's not like you had a fuck ton of choices. I mean, it's not like you had $500 in your pocket and could go buy yourself like a great Thanksgiving dinner anyway. And it's right. Thanksgiving, like if you're not safe on Thanksgiving, then
what's right.
I know that happened though, because I when I went through therapy from my mom ringing my bell, I you know, there's that whole self blame piece is so hard to get out of your skull.
It is.
And
yeah, yeah, I think of all the things that I could have done differently, but I think everything I did was the only thing I could have done.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. And you know, and it's also hard, but for a big guy like you who fought as a teenager, and you were in golden gloves, right? To being a victim is the exact opposite of that. It's so hard to understand, like, well, wait, but the only way to forgive yourself is to say, you know, I was a victim here, but for a 6'2" golden glove boxer to even use the word victim is, I mean, that's a giant leap.
It's very hard. So you know, now everybody's going to know, but very few, but I would say maybe just a handful of people know, because, you know, I don't let anybody know what happened. Like I said in our interview, it's my problem, I guess, because so many people have big things and issues going on in their life. Me to lay my problems on them. I don't like to do that for some reason. I like to help people because of what I've been through. I think I've got a lot of knowledge to be able to help you.
I got two things to say about that. Number one, you're an angel for turning that around, because 99 out of 100 people would have folded and just gone on and never broke the cycle. And you broke the cycle.
I did. I appreciate
that. You did. Dude, now you can make me cry. That's the hardest thing in life. Good. That's the hardest thing in life to do, is to break the cycle. And you didn't break it. You smashed it. You went the complete opposite way. That should be on your tombstone. You went the opposite way, man. That is not an easy choice. It's the hardest choice. So congrats. I respect the fuck out of you, man. That is hard.
That means a lot. I mean, you know, you go through the mother, the dad, the kids in high school, and then you hit real life. You got to go to work, and you just got banged the hell out of for the first 20 years, and you get a little bit of a break, and then you get banged again. And it's like, really? Is this ever going to end? And so now I'm in a point where, you know, I've got a beautiful wife, a woman that takes good care of me, and it's been great for the last 15 years. I mean, when my nights are bad and I'm yelling and screaming, she helps me out and she holds me and brings me back to where I need to be. It's very difficult. It's very difficult at times.
That's beautiful. But even that, man, to like be able to have intimacy after that, they didn't. But you're doing it. Like, does anybody ever point out to you these giant? You're doing giant things. That's giant, Tad. To be able to hold down a monogamous, intimate relationship with a woman after your mom gropes you and you've got needles in your arms and people are abusing you, to be able to become the person who can have a wife for 15 years and to be able to accept like from somebody, dude, nobody can do that.
The trust issue was hard, definitely. That's why me and my wife didn't get married too soon. We waited 10, 11 years before we got married, just to make sure. Yeah. It's a perfect fit. You know, I would say to everybody, there's always a perfect match for you out there somewhere.
Yeah, man. Have you done PTSD work? Have you done like the EMDR and any of that stuff?
The EMDR, I'll be honest, fucked me up. That was not a good thing for me. Well, when they hit you with the EMDR, I mean, it brings everything bad that happened to you to the front. And I mean, I've been through so many different things. It all hit at once. It's like, it really messed me up. And I had to completely stop that program.
Okay.
And here in where I live, there's not great help here. Mental help, I would say, especially my situation. Nobody knows anything about, you know, ritual abuse, and they're not going to take the time to read about it, learn about it to help you. So 2 years ago, I told the professionals to just kiss my ass. I'm going to just do this on my own because, you know, I've been talking for 20 freaking years and you ain't done a damn thing. So, and I threw all the drugs in the garbage and shit. You know, I don't need my mind clusterfucked and being stupid and stuff like that. You know, I had something bad happen to me, just like I had with my mother and other people. So just deal with it. Move on.
Well, so you were medicated and then.
Yeah, they wouldn't medicate me. Yeah. Xanax and, other medications, which I no.
And did you go cold turkey off of that, or same thing?
Yep, great in the garbage. Yep.
Did you go through withdrawal?
Off the Xanax, I might have for about a week, but it wasn't major.
Right. Good. All right. Good. Because that's hard to do too, man.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to be on that crap. I don't want, you know, get Alzheimer's or dementia or screw up my mind anymore than I was screwed up over all this crap I've been through.
Right. Right.
Definitely.
What's the lesson that you, if you could drill it down to one lesson that, or one philosophy. So you get out of California and you're at a fork in a fucking road, and most people would become serial killers, drug abusers, join a bike gang, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. Your formative years, life has stunned, you know, it hadn't shown you a whole bunch of hope. You're at that fork in the road, and you chose this amazing path of grace towards musicians and helping other people and being in a great relationship. When you're at that fork, what was the thing you thought that made you choose the road less taken for sure?
I knew very young when I was going through that there was something special out there for me in life. And I was going to grab it. And I was going to find it someday. No matter how long it took, I was going to find it. And as bad as life can be, and as bad as a foul ball you might get, wasn't going to knock me down, not whatsoever. Just, you know, yeah, I have my bad days, my sad days, my mad days. But the next day, I make it beautiful. I keep moving on, make that progress. Even though some days it's hard to just get out of that bed. You just got to do it. Yeah,
man.
Persistence. You don't give up on yourself.
What do you think of your legacy? You've left this amazing legacy now.
Wow. Nothing I expected.
You've got to be proud.
I am. I don't think of it that way, and I appreciate that. And I am proud. I've survived quite a bit of things that I shouldn't have gone through in life, and nobody should go through any of those things.
Mm-hmm. But the legacy, you took all that evil and turn it into a legacy of music and support and art and creativity and humor and family.
I don't think I've told anybody other than my wife, but when I started No Cover TV in 2003, it was Big Al's World of the Weird from 97 to 2000. Then I came back and I started in 2003 as a No Cover TV. Two reasons I started that. One, of course, I wanted to be back on TV and promote the music like I always did. The second was, a big one was, if I'm on TV two times a week and these idiots come back for me and I come up missing, I have the audience out there that's going to wonder where the hell I am. So it's also a protection thing to do it.
That's amazing. And wow. So do you still worry about that or no? Like,
yep. When I go to big shows or concerts and work or whatever, I do have security and I do have a driver that takes me. That's trained in offense and defense driving. So, yes.
So you, look like, you so you, you so you escaped and
they're still out there. They're still alive. I pissed them off.
Do you ever think about like just going to the police and ending it, or would that not end it?
I went to the police. They couldn't do too much, and then I went to the FBI, and they just told me blatantly, just thank God they're there, you're here, and you're alive, leave it alone. It's like, really? Oh. Really? Come on, dudes. I know who they are, right where they are. Let's go get them.
Yeah. And that didn't work?
No. And a lot of people will ask me, why, since all these years, 21 years have gone by, 23 years, why don't you just go out there and finish it yourself? And believe me, that goes through the mind a lot. Why not go out there and finish this myself? Go up and kill him. That's exactly what I want to do to him. But I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to die or get hurt or anything like that. I got a beautiful life, and I'm not about to fuck that up for some idiots out there.
And you have this like beautiful legacy you built now.
Right. Yeah. Like, so I'm not going to screw.
This is your child. This legacy of music and support and... This is your child. This is what you're giving to. This is what the world is going to remember you for.
Well, I hope so. I didn't do that to do that, but it was just always get the music out there. Because I know how when I played, it was hard to get the music out there. So, you know, I didn't see too many people other than DJs and VJs on MTV charging people to come on their shows. It's like the bands don't have any damn money. So let's just put a show together where they can all come together. It doesn't cost them anything. Let's get their music out there. They're sorry. So that's what means the most to me.
What do you think happens to you when you die?
Oh, boy. I thought of that, you know, because I'm a very kind of scientific person. I love history and science. So, you know, I believe in God. I'm a Christian and stuff like that. I think, you know, there is a soul. And, you know, I know when I die, I feel I'm going to go to a beautiful place, whether that's heaven or whatever. But only stipulation that God knows is if you send me to where my mother is, I'll kick your ass and her ass, and I'm going somewhere else.
the reason I asked that question is because I wanted to go to the next one, which is, so how do you think your mother feels about you now? Like, do you think, I think my mom, I'll tell you mine first. I think my mom is sitting there going, oh my God, he did something nice with that shitty hand I dealt him. I'm proud of him and I'm sorry. What do you think?
That's the what I hope that I have in my heart, but the other part of my heart knows her, and she's just, I'm sure God has her outside the gates and won't let her in the pearly gates just because she's a real mean person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless when you die, you get enlightenment and you're like, holy, what the fuck did I waste that life doing?
Yeah. And I hope she's, contemplating, thinking what she did,
Yeah.
Exactly.
And to me, that's almost, for people like that, that's almost what I think hell is like, not that you're in eternal flames, but you must eternally struggle with the fact that that's what your life was.
Right. There's
no way for the rest of time. That's your legacy. That's what your life was.
Yeah. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be something positive in life. Nothing.
Mission accomplished, brother.
Yeah.
Man.
Appreciate it, John.
Do you write music about it ever?
Nope. When she passed away in 2008, I don't think about her. Don't want to think about her. Don't have dreams or any of that stuff. Nope.
Yeah.
It's done. It's over. Thank God I'm alive still.
Do you do any of the, you ever do mushrooms or anything? There's all that alternative stuff now for post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you ever mess around with that at all?
No, I haven't done that stuff since I was a teenager, early 20s.
Right. No, but under medical supervision now, I'm saying there's alternative.
No, I don't need drugs in my head. I mean, I might smoke a joint once in a while, but that's all.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so your point is you're only supposed to smoke a joint, not an entire bag of pot.
I've done a bag of pot before, but I understand where you were at for 2 days.
So damn dumb.
Oh, man. That's funny.
you don't have kids. Question mark.
I don't have any kids. No, my wife has a couple kids. Yes.
Was that on purpose? Like, did you just say?
It wasn't really on purpose. I just knew that I had a lot to do in my life, and fucking around with women wasn't one of them.
Yeah. And if your wife has kids, you have kids, right?
Right. My stepchildren. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have kids.
And grandkids. Yep. It's nice.
Oh, grandkids.
Yeah. 4 grandkids. Little babies.
What's that like?
Well, they're in Kansas City because her husband's in the military, so they're over there. And her son's in South Carolina, so we rarely see them.
Oh, okay. Because I'm having this week with my 17-year-old daughter, light of my life, saved my life. I didn't kill myself because of her, and she was there when I went to withdraw. This week is hell week, and She got a trip to the Bahamas for her senior trip. She got a car, and we paid. She dinged somebody's bumper, and we paid that off. Do you know what the thanks? So then she says, so last night she goes to see Wicked with my wife and my sister, and she wants to go out afterwards. It's like 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, bro, you're 17 years old. It's shitty cold here. But you're gonna go out Saturday night. It's one night at home. Do you know she pouted for an entire day? And still, right now, it's still in her room. not talking to me. And I'm like, and the only thing I'm clinging to for the last 24 hours is I'm going to have beautiful grandchildren.
There you go. Exactly.
That's what I'm looking for, man.
Oh, yeah. I don't talk too much to my stepdaughter, but it is what it is. But I love the grandkids. So, yeah.
No, step relationship is hard, man.
Very difficult.
Yeah, that's really hard. I would love to interview your wife. She must be amazing. I know mine. Mine went through my craziness and is still hanging around. And I'm like, but I've interviewed her, so I know her.
She's shy. She says she's shy. She don't like to come on camera, but maybe I can coax her someday to come on.
I would love that, man. She must be. She must have real depth to be able to understand tell me if you agree with this. Some trauma is just chronic and you just learn to manage it and never get over it.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Right?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're like me, you have a chronic condition and every day you get up and you got it and you take steps to manage it.
Yep.
You make good decisions for that day, and then you go to bed. And then tomorrow's the same thing. Is that the way it is with you?
That's the way it is every day, yeah.
How amazing is that, man?
It is. You know, she's my angel, so, and she knows that. So, yes.
Beautiful. Yeah. How's the podcast going? I mean, you have a popular podcast.
Yeah, this January, I'll be at it 2 years. I'm at, I think, a little over 250 podcasts I've done in less than 2 years.
What's the secret? How'd you get good?
You know,
I need to look.
I guess the way I run the show from TV to podcast to radio, it's my show. They're my questions. It's what I want to know. It's not what you want to know. It's what I want to know, the questions. So
right.
I ask them the way I want to ask them. And being older, more older than most of these musicians, you know, I have that respect and that experience. Now, right. if you're going at a cold turkey, you don't know, you're not a musician and you're talking to musicians and can't click, that's kind of hard to do an interview a little bit.
Is it? Do you interview people who aren't musicians too?
No. Well, I mean, back in Big L's world, I did. Yeah, I've done, you know, different interviews.
Here's what I found for podcasting, and if you ever get into that, I will be very curious. You got to let me know if it's the same for you. So I have like mental health experts on. I have like Trisha Surgeon on. I have politicians on. I have all these people on. It is so much harder to talk to them than it is to talk to the guitar player.
I bet. That's why I stay right where I'm at. Music.
And I have this horrible habit because I have bands on. Like you, I have bands on. But it's so much easier to talk to the guitar player. Like you, I get. The rest of you people, I don't know what you're plugging shit in. I don't know what that is.
It's like when I go out or hang around people, everybody's talking about sports. I don't watch sports. I mean, I watch boxing and fighting and stuff, but I don't watch football and baseball and all that shit. I listen to music. I'm a musician, but nobody out there talks music. So it's like,
what'd you think of the Tyson fight?
I think, you know, he took a walk on that just for the quick money.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could have laid Jake out easily.
It wasn't even a good walk, though. Like,
no.
Touch the guy a couple times. Sell me something.
Snack him a few good times. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Do you watch UFC?
What's that?
You watch UFC, MMA? Do you watch that stuff?
When I get a chance, yes, I do. I love that, definitely. Because like I said, I'm a fighter and I love all that stuff, definitely. Yeah.
You ever get knocked out?
Not knocked out, close, but never a knockout.
Never a knockout?
I've never been knocked out.
How many fights?
Oh, I can't count that high, but
everybody gets knocked out, no?
One thing that almost knocked me out was the beer bottle to my head. So a guy, I was at a Halloween party, and a guy came up behind me with a full beer bottle, and it sounded like a bomb exploded, and I dropped and I was out for a couple minutes on that one, but then I was out for this fight.
Do you ever regret not going pro?
No, I was just doing it to kick everybody's ass in town, that was all.
Right.
I wasn't looking to be a pro, no.
Do you think you could have, though, if that's what you wanted to do?
I don't think so, because I'm a big, luggy guy, so I think some of those smaller guys would have knocked me right on my ass.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know how to train, man. I just started fight training like a year and a half ago.
Okay.
But I don't hit a lot of things because I worry about my hands for the guitar.
Oh, like, sure, sure.
Right, right. Because I was hitting the bag. I was doing like 5 rounds a day.
Okay.
And then I'd go like, because I'm like, you know, I'm a finger picker. And then I put my hand on a guitar. Maybe stop hitting shit down. Maybe I'm just saying.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it was funny because after boxing, 10 years later, I went into karate because I wanted to learn those techniques and stuff. So that was great. So adding karate to boxing to street fighting, well, that just rounded it right out. I love that.
I am so glad we're friends because you could kick my abs.
Oh, no. Not at all.
No, you could. I'm not saying you would, but you really could.
Nice guy.
do you ever think of, I'm sure you've been asked this before, you ever fool around with writing a memoir?
People have asked me to write a book about what happened in California many, many times, and I would do it. I'm not a person to sit down and write or type or anything like that, but if I had somebody to sit down and take notes about everything I've been through or write a book, that's fine. I would do that.
I've ghostwritten many books.
Really? Yeah, we can talk.
All right. Because I would imagine that's probably more commonplace. Let me dial that back. Is it more commonplace than we think, or is it so rare what happened to you that there aren't like support groups and therapists trained?
There's no therapist trained. No, the people, my cousin is a Vietnam vet, and he, we're very close, and he has PTSD and Agent Orange and stuff like that. And he goes to the military base and talks out with his, majors and generals and all that stuff. They all get together and talk. Well, I told him what happened to me and stuff, and he says, I want you to see the major, my buddy. He's a major and he's a doctor. So I'm not supposed to, I'm not military, so I'm not supposed to talk to anybody military. And the major called me. I got to see him in a private office, and I told him what happened. He says, I know exactly what happened to you. Here's a gentleman's name, but he was in Texas, and he's one of the leading persons that deals with this type of thing that happened. But insurance, Medicare doesn't cover that. I don't have the money to go to Texas. So that was, I couldn't do it. So, but there's far and few people that know what ritual abuse is, because it's to the people it happens to, most of the time they don't survive, or they're so effed up that they're too scared to talk because the people are out there and they will come after you.
Yeah, like you're one of the rare ones that was able to escape it and build a life. Yeah. Like I see what you're saying. Most people that are victims of that just stay out of fear.
Right. And the fear was the biggest thing. I've never in my life ever been afraid of anything other than what I went through. I was more scared than anything in my life, I went through. And when I did escape, they did follow me for quite a ways.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah. And so I had a Jeep, a 5-speed Jeep. And here I'm trying to do a 5-speed Jeep, grinding gears, because I'm all fucked up on whatever they were injecting me.
Right.
And think straight. I almost ended up in Mexico. I'm going the wrong damn way. It's like, wait a minute here. So I cut across the medium and went back the other way.
Oh my God.
Oh. And I was just thankful I didn't get pulled over by a police officer. They take me in and do a drug test because I don't know what was in my system, and I didn't need to go to jail for something they thought I was doing or something like
that. Right. Right. That makes sense too. Yeah. Jeez, man. I'm trying to find the right word. I'm not proud of you because that's condescending. I mean, I so admire what you have built from that. That's incredible.
Thank you.
Man,
thank you.
That's really incredible. And I'm glad you're telling the story because you say burden people with your problems. And I say, fuck no. If Al can go through that and build this, then shame on you if you aren't willing to do the work to go through whatever you have to go through and build what you're supposed to be building, because you're clearly doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I there are days where, I can sit in the chair or the couch, and I can look at a blank wall, and I'll stare at it for 4 or 5 hours, and I'll be lost in California and what they're doing to me. Right. And I've learned to be able to snap out of it. I had a service dog for many years. I still have dogs. They're more or less, they're not service dogs anymore, but I had a big 125-pound black lab that was well-trained for me. And he could drag my body if need be and stuff like that. He was very well trained. He never needed to be on a leash. That's how trained he was.
Wow.
Yeah, so he was good.
And dogs are service dogs. It's so fun, right?
Yeah, I got my big one upstairs, Zoe. She's a great gal. So, if I'm lost in space, my wife knows to come and talk or say something to snap me out of it and stuff like
that. Right. And then, but that even like virtually, you couldn't connect with this doctor?
I could have, but still money. And virtually would be at a place, a mental hospital here, where you go in the doors, they lock them behind you. And that ain't happening to me.
We're doing. You can't do like a televisit?
You have to go to the hospital to do the televisit. You can't do it from your house.
Why not?
I have no idea. Like I said, they're screwed up here.
You know what we could do? We could do a podcast with them.
I don't know about that.
We could do a podcast with them. Maybe we don't air it. But we can do a podcast with him.
Well, he doesn't even know who I am, so I don't know if that would work. But
I'll pitch him. You're such a great man. You shouldn't be suffering.
I don't think I'm suffering. I just, I get my 3-4 hours of sleep a night. I'm all right.
3-4 hours, man.
Well, most of it's due to the pain that I have in my back and knees and shoulders, because I was a metal worker for a long time, you know, throwing hundreds of pounds of metal here and there. So I've had three major shoulder surgeries, the knees and the lower back. So, yeah, I can't lay on my back. So the sides, I only get maybe a half hour on each side. So I'm always flipping. So sleep a half hour, wake up, sleep a half hour, wake up. So and then when it's real bad, I'll just have to prop the pillows up and try to sleep sitting up.
And you don't self-medicate?
Just on marijuana once in a while. That's it.
That's amazing, man.
No, you know, I seen what alcohol did to my singer and my best friend, which tore us apart and our music apart. I've seen what drugs have done to my rock and roll friends that have been in the business trying to, you know, I've taken needles out of friends' arms. Right. And had to slap their asses back to life. CPR. I hate seeing that shit. And I'm an advocate for helping anybody that goes through any type of crap in life. You know, I will talk to anybody. You want to talk to me, I'll talk. Yeah.
Right. That's like, beautiful.
And I'm open to anybody out there that wants to talk, because life is hard. It does not deal you a beautiful bouquet of flowers all the time.
Yeah.
So
would you ever consider expanding your podcast into this area?
Yeah, I would, actually. I would. But I would like to do it with somebody like you.
Okay. I'm here. Let's go, man.
Let's do it. Boy, let's do it. Big Al and John. Oh, we're taking over the mental health industry.
Yes, because this story is so important. Like, because, again, maybe you're evolving from this, but I know part of you feels like you're burdening people. And I'm telling you, I just listened to your story right now. And I'm like, really, John? This guy overcame all that shit to build this amazing podcast world full of art and music and lifting people up and giving people opportunities. And you're having a bad day because your daughter looked at you wrong? Maybe. We could have some perspective here.
Well, that would be nice. I'd like to do that. You know, I appreciate you letting me come on and get it out. I've never done this, never thought about doing it. And I thank you for this opportunity to finally speak.
Good. And I would love to do this as many times as you want. And I would love to co-host shows with you and have people on that we could both share with. I think that's just super valuable, man.
I like that. You know, I say August is No Cover TV's Mental Health Month. Well, it shouldn't be just narrowed down to one month. It might as well be every month.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause people are sick year round, man, and suffer year round. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah, just to let everybody know that John's here and I'm here for every one of you out there that has some stuff that you're going through.
Yeah, man. Where do I get No Cover TV?
It's on YouTube and Spotify is all the audio shows, and are also on YouTube, No Cover TV Podcast. Just look it up on YouTube. You can see all the audio and video shows. I appreciate it. If you go ahead and subscribe so you can be updated on all the upcoming shows. It's great.
Fantastic, man. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much, my friend.
No, thank you, and I'm being dead serious about following up. Like, we'll hang up, but I'm going to chase you down. You have an amazing story that should be told more than once.
You're going to get this guy to cheer up. Don't do that, John.
Everybody cries on Home From Here. You have an amazing story. It needs to be told a million times. You have broken the cycle in ways that 99.999% of us can do, and you give hope. That's hope. You're sitting in a room with an electric guitar and a wife who loves you. That's hope. And you're inspiring musicians, man. You're doing the Lord's work. Thank you, brother.
So well, I agree, it's the Lord's work, definitely. You can do without him.
All right, man, I'm gonna chase you down.
All right, let's do this, John. All right,
all right. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Take care.
Thank you.